Hi, you're listening to Screen of the Crime.
I'm Tess.
And I'm Maggie. And this is a podcast where we talk about true crime.
And what would happen if your favorite TV and movie characters committed those crimes. Hey, what's up, you guys?
Hey!
Hello. How are you all?
I hope you're doing well.
Yes. happy holidays?
Yes. Right?
Yes.
Happy holidays.
Mm-hmm. It's the season of holidays.
That's the season of giving.
I'm not, like, 100% sure when this will, like, actually come out, so I don't want to be like, oh, it's this date.
Yeah, we are, in case you were concerned, we are bulk recording before winter break.
Yeah.
So that we can have an episode every week.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, so I'm not sure when this will be, but it will be.
It'll be out. You'll hear this.
Yeah.
At some point, maybe probably in December.
Yeah. So, Merry Christmas.
Merry Chrysler.
Yeah. All right.
So today's episode is not at all festive, because I didn't even consider that.
Oh, okay.
Didn't even think about it. It's not snowing right now, so, like, I was like, it's not Christmas, you know?
I mean, you're interesting that you're one to say that, because you've never, like, had snow on Christmas.
That's true, and Christmas has never felt like real Christmas. Sorry, Mom and Dad, you don't listen to this, but I've never felt like I've had a real Christmas.
Because of the snow, or...?
Yeah, like, when it's 80 degrees on Christmas, and you get your, like, pair of knockoff Uggs, and you're like, yay, my feet are gonna sweat to death, you know?
Okay.
No offense, Mom, I really like those knockoff Uggs. Let's start. Okay. Guess who I'm doing? You wouldn't know. I'm gonna do Robert Durst.
Okay.
Ever heard of him?
Yes, but I've definitely heard the name, but I do not know what you're about to say.
He is an infamous... old man. I don't know. He's, like, one of those people.
Okay.
Like, people know. They're like, oh, yeah, Robert Durst. Yeah, he definitely, like,
yeah,
did some stuff.
Okay.
All right, so let's talk about his early life, because that's how I always like to start.
Yeah.
He was one of four children, and he grew up in Scarsdale, New York. Isn't it weird? I feel like everything, all the crimes I do is, like, either in New York or, like, California or, like, Florida.
Yeah. There's nothing in, like...
three places.
Nothing in, like, you know, like, Minnesota, or, like...
Oh, maybe I'll find a Minnesota murder. Let's talk about Fargo.
Yeah.
That's in Minnesota, right?
The
show takes place in North Dakota, but...
No, I think you have it backwards. The show takes place in Minnesota,
but Fargo's in North Dakota.
The show takes place, I think they're kind of near, like, Duluth.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a good show. Highly recommend watching the TV series, and the movie, but the TV series. Okay. My brother liked it. My brother doesn't like anything. So he was the son of a real estate investor named Seymour Durst. And his wife was, like his mom, was Bernice Herstein.
Mm-hmm.
When Robert was seven, his mother died as a result of a fall from the family's Scarsdale home. He later claimed that moments before her death, his father walked him to a window from which he could see her standing on the roof. In March of 2015, New York Times interview, he said that in a March 15 New York Times interview.
Mm-hmm.
However, his brother Douglas denied this. As children, Robert and Douglas underwent counseling for sibling rivalry, which I didn't know was a thing.
Yeah.
And a 1953 psychiatrist reported on 10-year-old Robert's mentioning a personality decomposition and possibly even schizophrenia.
Hmm.
Yeah. So he went to school at Scarsdale High, where classmates described him as a loner.
Yeah.
As most serial killers are described.
Yes.
And he earned a bachelor's degree in economics in 1965 from Leahy University, where he was a member of the varsity lacrosse team and the business manager of the Brown and White student newspaper. He enrolled in a doctoral program at UCLA later that year, where he met Susan Bierman, but eventually withdrew from school and returned to New York in 1969.
Huh.
Durst went on to become a real estate developer in his father's business. However, it was his brother, Douglas, who later was appointed to run the family business in the 1990s.
So that's sibling rivalry, just in action.
Yeah. His brother's just superior to him.
Yeah.
The appointment caused a rift between Robert and his family, and then he became estranged from them.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so he was investigated for many crimes, so I'm going to go over them.
Okay.
Police have directly questioned Durst and sometimes conducted searches in connection to the disappearance of his first wife, Kathy McCormick, and two homicides, Susan Bierman and Morris Black.
Mm-hmm.
In one of these homicides, he was tried and acquitted. I bet you can't guess which one. Let's talk about the disappearance of Kathleen McCormick Durst.
Okay.
In fall of 1971, Durst met Kathleen McCormick, a dental hygienist, whose nickname was Kathy. Fun fact. After two dates, Durst invited McCormick to share his home in Vermont, where he had opened a health food store, and she moved there in January of 1972.
Fun.
However, Durst's father pressured him to move back to New York City to work in the family's real estate business.
Mm-hmm.
So, Durst and McCormick returned to Manhattan, where they got married in April of 1973. Shortly after her disappearance, McCormick was a student in her... Oh, sorry, shortly before her disappearance.
Yeah.
McCormick was a student in her fourth year at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine in the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
And was only a few months short of earning her degree.
Mm-hmm.
Which, tangent, my brother just got his degree, which...
Congratulations.
Yay, go Mason. I know you don't listen to my podcast and don't know about it, but... Yay, he now graduated college. All right. So she was intending on becoming a pediatrician. McCormick was last seen by someone other than Durst. Mm-hmm. The evening of January 31st, 1982, at her best friend's dinner party in Newtown, Connecticut. She had arrived unexpectedly, and her friend noticed that she was upset. She was also wearing red sweatpants, which the friend found odd, since McCormick had often dressed in much better quality clothing.
Yeah. So,
she looked like a wreck.
Yeah.
She later left for South Salem, New York, after a call from her husband. Although the couple argued and fought, Durst maintained that he put his wife on a train to New York City, had a drink with a neighbor, and spoke to his wife by telephone later that evening. Quote, "That's what I told the police," Durst later told documentary filmmakers. "I was hoping that would just make everything go away."
Interesting. I'm curious as to what that means.
Yeah, you'll figure out. After McCormick had left her friend's house, she was supposed to meet her friend at a pub called the Lion's Gate in Manhattan. You ever been there?
No.
Have you ever been to Manhattan?
I mean, I was, like, a very small child.
Oh, okay. Never mind. I've never been there. Mm. When she failed to show up, her friend became concerned and repeatedly called the police for several days.
Oh, wow.
I hope you do that for me, Tess.
Yeah.
Days later, Durst filed a missing person report. A doorman at one of the two Manhattan apartments where the couple lived claimed to have seen McCormick there on February 1st, which was one day after she was last seen, but also claimed that he had seen her only from behind and couldn't be 100% sure that it was her.
Ah.
McCormick had been treated at a Bronx hospital for facial bruises 3 weeks before. She told a friend that Durst beat her, yet she did not press charges over the incident.
Hmm.
McCormick asked Durst for a $250,000 divorce settlement. Durst canceled his wife's credit card, removed her name from the joint bank account, and refused to pay her medical school tuition.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. At the time of his wife's disappearance, Durst had been dating Prudence Farrow, for three years, and was mm-hmm. living in a separate apartment.
Yeah.
Durst initially offered $100,000 for his wife's return, then reduced the reward to $15,000.
Mm-hmm.
Only 3 weeks after reporting her missing, he was seen discarding his wife's possessions, which he denied. When McCormick's friend and sister had heard she was reported missing, they broke into her cottage, hoping to find her. Instead, they found the cottage ransacked and McCormick's mail left unopened. They then became afraid and left. So, the investigation and the aftermath. After McCormick went missing, police said that Durst had claimed to have last spoken to her when she called him at their cottage from Manhattan. He claimed that the last time he had seen her was at the Katana train station, where she was planning to board at 21:15. Train to Manhattan. He also claimed that on February 4th, the supervisor of her medical school called him and said that she had called in sick on February 1st and was absent from class for the entire week. I don't think medical school can normally call your husband when you're sick. But
what year is this?
I think it's the 80s or 90s.
I don't know any. Why would they call?
I don't know. It is uncertain that it's uncertain if it was indeed McCormick who made the call. The day after Durst received the call from McCormick's medical school, he reported her as missing. The police found her stories to be full. His stories to be full of contradictions. The McCormick family now wants Kathleen declared dead, as they strongly believe she is deceased.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother, Anne McCormick, had before attempted to sue Durst for $100 million. Kathleen's parents are now deceased. Kathleen's younger sister, Mary McCormick Hughes, also believes that Durst killed her. The New York State Police quietly reopened the criminal investigation into the disappearance in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
Searching Durst's former South Salem residence for the first time, investigations became public in November of 2000. So we're on to the next case.
Okay.
This is the homicide of Susan Berman.
Yeah.
On December 24th, 2000, Berman, a longtime friend of Durst, who has facilitated his public alibi after McCormick's disappearance, and who had recently received $50,000 from Durst, was found murdered execution style in her home in Benedict Canyon, California. Durst is known to have been in North California days before Berman was killed.
Convenient.
And to have flown from San Francisco to New York the night before Berman's body was discovered. Mm-hmm. Although, Durst confirmed to the LAPD that he had recently sent Berman $25,000 and faxed investigators a copy of her 1982 deposition regarding his missing wife, he declined to be further questioned about Berman's murder. Durst said in a 2005 deposition that Berman called him shortly before her death to say that Los Angeles police wanted to talk to her about McCormick's disappearance. Durst moved to Galveston, Texas in 2000,
mm-hmm.
lived in a boarding house, and began posing as a woman to avoid police inquiry.
Yeah.
Durst had been tipped off to the reopened investigation into his wife's disappearance on October 31st, Halloween, 2000, mm-hmm. and immediately began planning his life as a fugitive. You know.
Yeah.
Make a Pinterest board.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Berman's biographer, Kathy Scott, has asserted that Durst killed Berman because she knew too much about McCormick's disappearance.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the end of that one.
Yeah.
The killing and dismemberment of Morris Black. On October 9th, 2001, like a year later, Durst was arrested in Galveston shortly after. Body parts belonging to his elderly neighbor, Morris Black, were found floating in Galveston Bay. He was released on a $300,000 bail the next day. Wish I had that kind of money.
Yeah.
Durst missed a court hearing on October 16th, and a warrant was issued for his arrest on charges of bail jumping.
Mm-hmm.
This is where it gets funny. On November 30th, he was caught inside a Wegmans supermarket in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, after trying to shoplift a chicken salad sandwich on pumpernickel bread, Band-Aids, and a newspaper, even though he had $500 cash in his pocket. Which I think is, like, really funny. Like, that's how he was caught. He was shoplifting a sandwich and Band-Aids when he had cash in his pocket, you know?
Yeah. Wegmans.
I don't like Wegmans.
You don't?
Like, I like, okay. I like Publix better. Mm-hmm. Like, I enjoy Publix.
Yeah.
But, like, I know this girl who is my friend and I will be living with next year. And she is a diehard fan of Wegmans. And, I don't know, maybe it's just because I'm not used to it, but I don't know. I just like Publix better. Like, nothing against Wegmans.
Oh, no. I mean, I think it's just, I think it's normal, you know? Like, it's not anything special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like they have a lot, like, they have, like, a lot of samples, like, free samples.
They have a lot of food that is, like, ready to go.
Yeah, which is fun and interesting. Yeah. Like, if I wanted, if I was, like, rich and stuff, and wanted to go there and, like, buy, like, pre-made dinners and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I'd Wegmans it up, you know?
Yes, the height of luxury. Wegmans pre-made dinners.
Honestly, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to this.
Yeah.
A police search for his, of his rented car yielded $37,000 in cash, two guns, marijuana, Black's driver's license, and directions to the Connecticut home of Gilbert Najami, which I might have pronounced completely wrong, and who was a former confidant of McCormick, who had dodged Durst for years, publicizing accusations he had murdered his wife.
Yeah.
Durst also used his time on the run to stalk his brother, Douglas, visiting the driveway of his home in Katana. I don't know, I don't think that's how it's pronounced.
What's, let me see it.
It's, it, like, I mean, that's how it would be pronounced, Katana.
Yeah.
Whatever. Katana, New York, while armed. Durst employed defense attorney John Waldron while he was held on charges in Pennsylvania. He was eventually extradited to Texas for trial. Mm. Now, let's talk about the trial.
Yeah.
In 2003, Durst was tried for the murder of Black. He employed defense attorney Dick DeGuerin and claimed self-defense of killing an old man. Okay. DeGuerin conducted 2 mock trials in preparation for the case. Durst's defense team had difficulty communicating with him, so they hired psychiatrist Dr. Milton Altschuler.
Yeah.
To find out why. He spent over 70 hours examining Durst and diagnosed him with Asperger's syndrome, saying, quote, his whole life's history is so compatible with diagnosis of Asperger's disorder. Durst's defense team argued on trial that the diagnosis explained his behavior.
Yeah.
Durst claimed he and Black, a cranky and confrontational loner, struggled for control of Durst's .22 caliber target pistol after Black grabbed it from its hiding place and threatened him with it.
Yeah.
During the struggle, the pistol discharged, shooting Black in the face. During cross-examination, Durst admitted to using a paring knife, 2 saws, an axe, and an axe to dismember Black's body before bagging and dumping his remains in Galveston Bay. You know, self-defense.
Yeah.
Black's head was never recovered, so prosecutors were unable to present sufficient forensic evidence to dispute Durst's accounts of the struggle. Like, that he was shot in the head.
Yeah.
As a result of lack of forensics, the jury acquitted Durst of the murder. In 2004, Durst pleaded guilty in 2 counts of bail jumping and 1 count of evidence tampering. As a plea bargain, he received a sentence of 5 years and was given credit for time served, requiring him to serve only 3 years in prison. Durst was paroled in 2005. The rules of his release required him to stay near his home. Permission was required to travel. That December, Durst made an unauthorized trip to the boarding house where Black had been killed and to a nearby shopping mall. At the mall, he ran into former Galveston trial judge Susan Criss, who had presided over his trial due to this incident.
That's so weird.
He shouldn't shop anymore. He's always going to get caught.
Yeah.
The Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles determined that Durst had violated the terms of his parole. Or maybe that's just the word parole. Sorry.
Yeah.
And returned him to jail. He was released again from custody on March 1st, 2006. Asked in March 2015 whether she believed Durst murdered Morris Black, Criss commented, quote, you could see that this person knew that they were what they were doing and that it was not a first time. Oh boy. I read that weirdly. You could see that this person knew what they were doing and that it was not a first time. The body was cut perfectly like a surgeon who knew how to use this tool on this bone and a certain kind of tool on that muscle. It looked like not a first-time job. That was pretty scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. In March of 2015, Durst was charged with possession of a firearm and the possession of a firearm with a controlled substance in Louisiana. And he was denied bail.
Oh.
Now let's talk about the arrest for the Berman murder.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of my favorite parts.
Okay.
So the HBO series The Jinx, which is out and I highly recommend watching, was being filmed. It was on the final episode of a 6-part documentary about Robert Durst.
Yeah.
Durst went to the restroom, but didn't know his mic was still on. And they recorded him mumbling, "What the hell did I do? Killed them all, of course."
Oh my god.
Which is a confession.
Yeah.
Durst was arrested in March of 2015, a few days after the gun thing that I previously mentioned. He was in the Canal Street Marriott under a false name of Everett Ward. In addition to a .38 revolver with four live rounds and one spent shell casing, the police also found 5 ounces of marijuana, a flesh-tone latex mask, maps of Louisiana, Florida, and Cuba, a fake Texas ID, a new cell phone, and $42,631. His pretrial hearing included extensive testimony from a number of older witnesses who potentially would not be available when the trial itself began. And in October of 2018, this year,
yeah,
Los Angeles County Superior Judge Mark Windham ruled there is enough evidence to try Durst for the murder of Berman, and Durst will be arraigned in November 8th, 2018. The following day, during his court appearance, Durst pled not guilty.
Wow.
That's it.
That's it.
I mean, yeah. So the trial's not over, obviously.
But yeah, it's ongoing.
I just think it's really funny that, like, how he was caught the two times was just, like, shoplifting from Wegmans.
Yeah.
And during a documentary about himself.
Yeah.
He just, like, was like, "What did I do? Oh, yeah, I killed them all." And they were like, "We just got that on film." Like,
The people at the documentary must have been shook.
They were like, "Oh,
we just solved the case."
We did it, guys. Yeah. But, so that's fun and dandy.
Yes, it is.
So he definitely killed those people.
Yeah.
And that's Robert Durst.
Wow.
He's old now. I was looking at pictures of him. He's an old man.
Oh.
Not like an old man.
But, cool.
You know, like, I'll show you a picture. Here he is. This is this man.
Oh, I don't like him.
Oh, I don't like him either. He's got those sunken in eyes.
He looks like Voldemort.
He's got a neck brace on in this picture.
Ooh.
Yeah, so that's Robert Durst.
Huh.
What a scary man.
Cool.
Yep.
All right.
Do you have one?
Yeah, but you're going to be really mad about it.
Oh, dear God.
So, at the beginning of the case, I was like, okay, I got this in the bag. Because it's like, you know, you were talking about, like, sibling rivalry.
Yes.
And so, here's my very long stretch. Because I think, like, him as a person is just so specific that I'm like, I don't know, like, anyone else, like, that would be, like that.
Okay.
So, I'm thinking sibling rivalry-wise.
Oh, God.
The Property Brothers.
Dear God.
But no, here's the twist. The Property Brothers have a third brother who's a magician.
Oh, God. Is that, like, a fact?
That's a fact.
Oh, God. I hate that.
Yeah, so it's the Property Brothers' third brother is out to kill. Because, like, you were saying, like, in the case he was, like, with a construction, like, firm thing. Something.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it was a real estate firm.
Or real estate.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the one brother does, like, the real estate. So, yeah. This is the team.
Investor. Yeah, continue. Hit me with this property brother shit.
So, the third property brother, which, I don't know his name. The magician. I'll look it up really quick.
I got you.
Okay. Yeah, so the third property brother is madly jealous because
his older brothers are wildly successful.
Oh my god, he's a triplet. I fucking hate this. Yeah. His name is Jonathan Scott.
I think Jonathan's
one of the property brothers. When you type in property brothers magician,
just type in third property brother.
Please hold.
Okay. Yeah, but so he is out for revenge because the property brothers are just so much better than him. So that's kind of where it comes from. So he's like, in the beginning, he's just like driven by like this rivalry, so it makes him just so like internally mad that he just can never be good enough for them.
Is it J.D. Scott?
Yeah, I think so.
So we have Drew Scott, yeah, property brother number one, and then Jonathan Scott, property brother number two, and then J.D. Scott,
yeah,
property brother number three.
Yeah, J.D. That's
the J.D. man. Power and Associates.
Yeah. So, yeah, J.D.'s just like, fuck y'all. Like, so he just goes crazy because, like, no one knows that there's a third property brother. And it's him. Yep, there's a picture of him.
I hate him.
Yeah.
He's disgusting.
Yeah. So he, in the future, because he's still young now, but, like, this is his future. He is just going to need attention.
Understandable.
Yeah,
he's not a property brother.
Yeah, he needs the attention. And he also wants to take his brothers down. So, like, what better way to do that than to murder people? Because it's, like, bad press on the family.
True, true.
And also, like, then the news is focusing on him. But if he's, like, just crazy enough, he doesn't care if it's, like, good press or bad press.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah. So, the first murder.
Of the wife.
His wife.
Let's say he's married, yeah.
Let's say he's married. Like, they're all going to, like, he's supposed to go out with his brothers, and his brother's like, oh, where's your wife? And he's like, oh, she was sick. Something like that.
Yeah.
Then she's actually murdered.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. A twist. Yeah. And so he kind of, like, again, have all these, like, random-ass murders.
Yeah.
But, like, not getting caught for them, because he's just, like, a little bit too good. And he's like, oh, that's good for his confidence. He's like, oh, I'm good at something. But also, like, he's like, I need to get caught for these. So he kind of does, like, some stupid stuff to, like, draw more attention to himself. Like, mm-hmm. You know, shoplifting at, like, Wegmans.
Yeah.
You know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think they live in Canada.
They do.
They do. So I don't know what a Canadian grocery store is.
Shoplifting at Tim Hortons.
Shoplifting at Tim Hortons. I don't think you can even do that, but
I don't know.
Yeah. He's, like, does something stupid at some Canadian place.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, wow. And then he's just like drops all these hints and like kind of wants it, so he's like, oh, what about this murder? I wonder who did that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And they're like, this guy's acting super weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he kind of has the police on his trail now.
Uh-huh.
But it's getting like a little bit too close, and he doesn't really want to go to jail. So, and like, again, he has like the second murder, how it's like, you know, someone who knows a little bit too much.
Yeah.
To quote Maggie.
Like what I just said 2 seconds ago.
Yeah. That would kind of be like, you know, he needs to murder again, but like also kind of kills two birds with one stone.
Yeah, someone who's like, I'm gonna talk about how you murdered your wife.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, you ain't.
Yeah. So there's another murder, and like, he's definitely a suspect now, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then, yeah, so he needs to, like, leave Canada, and he'll go to Florida, just because.
Oh, okay, thanks.
Yeah, and so he's trying to be, like, incognito, and then, but he's just, like, now that he's killed, he's just kind of going crazy.
Yeah.
And he's in Florida, so it's just easy.
Don't do me like that. Yeah.
Yeah, so then he just, like, would kill his neighbor.
And cut his whole body up.
Yep, just out of rage, pure rage.
Pure rage.
Yeah. And then it's, like, that's kind of sloppy and obvious, so he would get caught for that, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And then he'd be on an episode of, like, Property Brothers.
Yeah.
And his mic would be on, and he'd be like, I killed everyone.
Yeah. No, yeah, you're right. Like, he would be, like, an extra, be like, oh, and here's the third Property Brother, and then he'd be like, finally my time. And then, like, you know, say something absolutely crazy, and they'd all be like, what?
Yeah.
The set of Property Brothers is shook.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so he would definitely go to jail.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Canadian jail. They have jail in Canada.
Yeah, they have jail in Canada.
That's a dumb question.
We have Canadian listeners. Yeah. Fun fact.
Oh, we do?
Yeah.
That's fun.
Well, at least we have Canadian Instagram followers.
Oh.
I don't know how to tell where anyone's from that listens to us.
Yeah.
But if you're from Canada and you listen to us, tell us.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
It would be.
Yeah.
We love Canada.
We do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was recently in Canada. And we're gonna go there next year.
Yep. And the year after that.
And every year until we die.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll say hi to the Property Brothers while we're there.
Uh-huh. Because Canada is just so small.
No. Toronto's so big.
Big city.
Yeah.
I like Toronto. I'd move to Toronto. I was rich.
Same.
First, it would start with me buying pre-made food from Wegmans.
Yep.
Then I'd move to Toronto.
Yeah.
The dream.
They don't have Wegmans in Toronto, though.
Damn.
Yeah.
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 Anyway, so you can follow us on all social media at Screen of the Crime, and you can email us at screenofthecrimepodcast@gmail.com. And if you would like to become a supporter of us, you can support us through Anchor, which is how Heather Martin did, or you can become a Patreon supporter through Patreon.
Yeah.
And you can give us, like, $1 a month, because that's super nice. And our content's fun.
Yeah.
And we need to afford housing. So, that would be great.
Yeah. So, thank you all for listening.
Have a nice day and holiday. Bye.